This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, hour three. Thanks for joining us, and a good Monday to you. NFC East Week starts today. Washington Commanders on the clock. We have Dave Preston, WTOP, friend of the program, will join us to talk about a team that went 8-8-1 last year, did not make the playoffs, but is kind of hovering around that danger zone of the NFL where you're like, are they good? Are they not good? How do we grade them? How do we look at them? And so he'll join us to talk about what Ron Rivera's got up his sleeve. But as we said earlier, there's a lot about this team that you can get into the finer details of their defense, their offense, et cetera. Sam Howell taking over the starting job. But the reality of it is that Josh Harris is now the owner of this team. And that's been the most important acquisition this offseason for Washington, is that Dan Snyder is out and Josh Harris is in. And no longer are Washington Commander fans going to need to feel embarrassed by their owner, that something new is going to pop up, that he's doing something and making a mess of the situation and making bad decisions from the football side of things. I mean, it's been wild. When you think about the 25 years, they tried to bring Joe Gibbs back. They hired Steve Spurrier. They brought in guys, fired guys, different quarterbacks all the time. Never really got Washington back to a level. Hired Mike Shanahan, gave Mike Shanahan a second go around to being a head coach after he was let go by the Denver Broncos. There's a 25-year legacy of decisions that some of them thought would work out and didn't, and some of them were just plain terrible. Like, again, bringing in Carson Wentz last season in a team that just Taylor Heinicke, Sam Howell, you can go back, and Alex Smith was probably the better feel-good story of the Commanders. But now you've got a new owner, you've got the same coach, the same players, but can they get one or two more victories to put them in a conversation in a relatively weak NFC? But the problem is, it's a relatively weak NFC, but it's not a relatively weak NFC East. The Philadelphia is the creme de la creme, but Dallas should win double-digit games. They're that solid. If Dak Prescott plays reasonably well, they should win 10, 11 games. The Giants, with second year under Brian Daboll, may not be a surprise to teams coming in like they were last year, but they were a playoff team last year. So
got to add Daniel Jones, big contract.
That's right. Daniel Jones getting his contract.
Got to play for the money.
You know? So now you're talking about a very tough division. So Washington might be in the conversation, right? Might be in the conversation of, hey, can they get 9 wins? And that might be good enough for a wild card, but they're also competing in their own division. So you don't have a lot of wiggle room if you finish last in that division to make a 3-team wild card, because you might find somebody in the West might have a decent season outside the division leader. Somebody in the North might have a good season outside of the division leader. So it's a little too dangerous to try to play for that one wild card spot if you're Washington. But nevertheless, we'll have him join us on the show. College football got started over the weekend. Week 0, Notre Dame won big, USC won big. Those were just two of the ranked teams. There's just two ranked teams that played in Week 0. Full slate of games coming up on Thursday leading up into this weekend, and now we're off and running. But go ahead.
No, I was just saying it just feels good.
Yeah, it does feel good.
It just felt good. I mean, that's what I said. My biggest takeaway from the weekend Saturday, you know, just doing a few little odd chores around the house and just having Navy and Notre Dame on. I mean, it was like, you know, hey, these are two teams that, you know, we're talking about. I mean, Navy used to be, but it was just the fact of seeing, like, this is a real game right now.
There was one story that popped out over the weekend, and that was Arizona State. They're not going to be able to play a bowl game this upcoming season. The school self-imposed a one-year bowl ban stemming from COVID-19 recruiting violations done by Herm Edwards and his staff. This is what I really don't like about college athletics and the way they administer penalties. And this is the thing that there's no real solution to this, because you want to penalize the school, because the school in the end is responsible for their employees, right? So if a coach goes and does recruiting violations and something that warrants a penalty, the school does pay the price, because they're in the end, they hired the individual, they're responsible for the individual. But this is a situation where Arizona State was probably better off trying to see if a self-imposed bowl ban last year was more warranted than this year, with a brand new head coach and players coming in a season. Look, no one thinks Arizona State's going to be all that good, but you just need 6 wins to get into a bowl game. And Kenny Dillingham is the new head coach, and he's kind of starting fresh and taking over. He's got kids now that are looking forward to a new era of Sun Devil football. And he had to call them into a meeting yesterday to break the news to them that everything that they've been working all of this fall camp for, that, yeah, look, maybe we can get 6 wins and go to a bowl game, the reward at the end of the season. No, we're not fighting for the Pac-12 championship. No, we're not going to be in the running for one of the 4 playoff spots. But we can go to a bowl. We can show progress. We can bring some of this, some pride into this school by going to whatever bowl game at the end of the season invites us to. And now they can't. They can't for something nobody on that football staff did. But again, it's to avoid getting a heavy penalty from the NCAA. Meanwhile, where's Herm Edwards? All right, where's Herm Edwards? He's back on television. He was on TV. He left TV to become the head coach at Arizona State. He left Arizona State and after being fired, and now he gets to go right back to television. There's no penalty for him, right? There's no penalty for him. There's penalty for the school. And inevitably, the school receives the penalty, and it affects the new head coach and the kids. You can make a mess of a situation, go on to the NFL, go back into television, still make your money. You can leave the disaster behind. And because these are just rules and not laws, nobody's going to jail, no one's getting prosecuted, the only thing you can do is just punish the school and everyone involved in it. There's no answer, though. There's no right answer to it. Right? I mean, if the penalty was the coach would do, they would convict more of this stuff.
Yeah, but it does leave a sour taste in your mouth because this coach didn't do anything.
Yeah, this coach didn't do anything.
Yeah, it was the organization that did it, but that organization that did it is long gone now. Even probably most of the players are gone too.
Jim Harbaugh is going through that same thing where Michigan decided to step in. They self-imposed a 3-game ban on Harbaugh. He won't coach the opener. They've got like East Carolina, UNLV, Bowling Green.
Nah, he got a slap on the wrist.
Yeah, so they've got they're going to rotate coaches around, and it's all from the COVID stuff. And rules are important. I get it, and you want to create a fair recruiting situation. I get it, but can we just? I don't know. I'm probably going to get pushback for this. Can we look back at COVID and go, you know, nobody really knew what to do. Nobody know, you know, it was, can we just ignore that and go forward? It's like, yeah, was I supposed to call a player? Could I not call a player? Could I see a player? No, it was a dead period, I guess. I mean, look, you could make the argument Herm Edwards knew what the rules were involving COVID recruiting and he blew it. And so did Jim Harbaugh. He blew it. I think Harbaugh's situation was that he wasn't cooperative with the NCAA and Michigan was like, can we just get something on the table, self-imposed, so the NCAA doesn't hammer us. And I think Arizona State was doing the same thing. You couldn't suspend Herm Edwards because you fired him, so what you did was you took a bowl opportunity away from the team. Now, Arizona State's got 8 home games this year. I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility that they could have hovered around 6 wins. Don't get me wrong. It's a whole new team. No one's expected much from them. But with 8 home games, if they squeeze out a couple of Pac-12 victories and the couple of games that's on their schedule in terms of let's roll through this team we're paying to play, then there's a possibility they could have gotten to 6. But, you know, I don't know. It's just there's no answer to it, to be honest with you. There's no other way to do it. You just go, all right, self-impose. And that's it. We'll see. You know what? And here's the other thing the school is trying to do. Here's the other thing. The school is also saying, you know what? Let's do it this year. Let's not do it next year when we win the Big 12. When we go to the Big 12, let's get a fresh slate. Let's not have any of this hover of us while we're moving conferences.
And I'm glad you brought that up because there's been rumors circulating with the Big 12 adding a few more teams.
Yeah, I know.
I saw that it's been ranging anywhere from, hey, they're going to add the other four Pac-12 teams or whatever, how many Pac, whatever you want to say now, or it's just going to be Stanford and Cal.
I was thinking about this over the weekend, but not really a lot, but I had thought about this last week. I was kind of thinking over the weekend. Do you think in 10 years, give it a decade, that we will look back and go, and schools and people will say, this is too much. We got to break these off. Do you think eventually, do you think the Big 12 will go, there'll be schools in the Big 12 going, you know what? We're never going to get a shot at this. It's too big. It's too much. Let's break away and form our own conference.
See, you mean like All of a sudden, are you talking about super conferences? Or
okay,
just...
so you got a Pac-12 now, that a Big 12 now that could have, what, 18 teams?
Yeah, it could be, you know, West and Midwest, basically.
Do you think in 10 years they go, you know, this experiment's not working?
And they all form up again?
Yeah, there's like,
another Pac-12?
Like 7 or 8 of them go, let's leave, let's see if other schools want to leave, and we'll form a new, I don't know, call it whatever you want, but we're going to form something new. Because playing in an 18-team conference didn't work out like we thought it was going to work.
Yeah.
But maybe 10 years from now, people say it's the best thing that ever happened to them.
It could be. I mean...
Right? The money was great. It funded a lot of things. Or do you think they go, you know what? We got lost in a huge shuffle. And you know what? The volleyball team really doesn't want to fly cross-country for a match. And it really got to a point where
That's the thing that I keep going back to, too, is that, you know, we'll look at these conferences and go football.
Right.
You know, football, football, football. It'll work for football. You know, and it will. It's those other teams and the other smaller sports. It's like, I just don't know.
Yeah. I'm with you.
I mean, is it going to work for volleyball? Is it going to work for swimming and gymnastics or baseball, you know, softball? I mean, that's going to be the real crux, because they don't follow. I mean, football follows kind of the same NFL schedule. I mean, you know, maybe these kids, you know, fly in on a Friday, you know, and they're a little jet lagged or something like that. You know, there's ways around, or they leave Thursday and they, you know, just you work their schedule so they don't have classes on Friday. Most college kids don't have classes on Fridays anyways. I don't see how it works for the other sports.
No, it doesn't work
because they have midweek games.
And you know what? It's going to get to a point where eventually college is going to go, we don't really need a swimming team.
Yep.
We don't really need a diving team anymore. And really, golf? Come on. Yeah, go to the Corn Ferry Tour if you're that good. Seriously. it'll start being like, we'll just eliminate these sports because what's the point in wasting money?
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right. Dave Preston going to join us in 15 minutes to talk Washington Commanders. We'll have the Giants, Cowboys, and Eagles later on this week, as the NFC East is our last division of the 8 for our NFL previews. And then, of course, the NFL season starts next week. Kansas City against Detroit. By the way, great for Detroit. I'm really excited that they got the kickoff game. That's fantastic. What an accomplishment. I mean, you would have won a lot of bets. A lot of bets if you said the 2023 season would start between Kansas City and Detroit. Yeah, there's just no way you would have thought that they would have put the Lions in the kickoff game. But they did. They did put the Lions in the kickoff game because they played really well later in the season. They've kind of become a fun football team, a likable football team, and I think that's kind of one of the reasons. So we'll have that Thursday, a week from Thursday, the NFL season starting.
Yeah, by the way, it used to be Detroit just getting the Thanksgiving game.
Yeah,
I mean, they always got like an odd Thursday nighter or, you know, Monday nighter at some point.
Yeah,
but it was always the only time you ever saw them was, or thought about them, was Thanksgiving.
Yeah, you're right. A Thursday primetime game. But Thanksgiving was it. And remember, people wanted to take the Thanksgiving game away from
them. Yeah.
They said, oh, we don't need this. I'm like, you can't. Please let the city of Detroit have one thing.
Yeah, well, I mean, they're the reason why there is a Thanksgiving game.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Don't take it away because you don't like watching them one day a week, one day a year.
Out of the season.
One game out of the season, you seriously couldn't just let them have it?
Haters got to hate, Tony.
Yeah. Haters got to hate. Well, exactly. So.
But no, it is fun that they've got the kickoff game now.
Yeah, it is. Pretty cool. Did you by any chance see any of the highlights of the NASCAR driver Ryan Pease flipping through?
Yes. We actually watched it live.
You did watch it live?
We had it on because it was, you know, had watched Notre Dame Navy.
God bless you. And you watched a little NASCAR this weekend.
Well, we had it on Notre Dame Navy, and then I just never changed the channel. Yeah. And just kept it on. We had actually gone to a friend's house Saturday. And then came back, and when we came back, it was on the telly, and we sat down, and my youngest again, who's the only one who was watching sports with me this weekend. I appreciate him, but when he watches NASCAR, for him that's Cars, the movie, Lightning McQueen, right. You know, the whole thing, and he was really into it, and we both sat there and sat down, no more than 2 minutes before that car started flipping.
That's one of the more violent crashes
unbelievable
I've seen in years in NASCAR. The cars are really not designed to do that
anymore. No, but I mean, when it hit the grass, that thing took off like it was it was flying.
It was flying, yeah.
I mean, it caught the underbelly, and I didn't realize that the underbelly was pretty much solid.
They, this Rusty
which might
Wallace,
get fixed now, right?
Yeah. Rusty Wallace had, did that to you. But they'll say, a lot of these guys will say, and it's all physics, they'll say, like, a crash like that is easier to survive because as you're tumbling, the force and the energy is going out, right? It's when you go, like Dale Earnhardt did, unfortunately, when he died, it's going from that 180 miles an hour to a sudden stop, like going up and hitting the wall, and all that energy is being transferred right to you into the car, rather than as you're doing forward momentum, you're flipping, you're very secure in the car. The car is built very solid around you. The roll bars and everything are really built solid. Everything else can be flying away. All that sheet metal, that stuff can be flying away. As long as the roll cage is intact, you're very secure in the car. The Hans device is secure. All of those things that keep you intact. You're just going with momentum. You're just tumbling like a ride at an amusement park, rather than going from 180 to zero.
And probably the worst thing that you'll suffer, I mean, unless your arm got caught up and about, you might get a concussion from it, right?
Yeah. You'll get beat up a bit.
Yeah.
But if you know, stay within that box as you're rotating, you're going to be
keep your hands on the wheel, okay. Or do you grab like your...
That's a great question.
Like you know, are there little handles like there would be like on a roller coaster?
That's a great question. I always wondered about that when cars are flipping. Do you want your hands up on the wheel? If you know there's no reason to put your hands on the wheel, like you're just at the mercy of physics.
Yeah.
Do you just?
So I said, you know,
do you tighten you just, up like do you tighten yourself up
like you would on a roller coaster.
Ride?
Yeah. Just hold on for dear life and go, it'll be over soon.
Exactly.
I mean, it was amazing. I mean, that car flipped what 9 times?
Yeah.
And then caught on fire.
Times. Yep.
Yeah. And then the guy walks away.
I know. It's incredible.
And I kind of got worried there for a second because no one was getting out. Now, here's a question I have for you.
Yeah.
I know you were around NASCAR a lot, and maybe it's a newer thing. But all the emergency personnel that went there, every single person that was out there.
Yeah.
Why are they all wearing helmets?
Good question. Good question. I think it's just case for other
– right.
You're out on a racetrack in case you – some debris is falling,
but, I mean,
or some
everyone,
other car or something.
I get that. But, I mean, once you assess the situation, I mean.
When you take the helmet off.
Yeah, I mean, the tow truck was ready to take the car out before the guy was out of the car, and the fire was still going.
I don't think I've ever heard that question asked ever about why would they wear a helmet.
That just crossed my mind. I just kept looking at every single person, all the EMTs that were out there. Everyone was like, everyone's wearing a helmet.
Yeah, right. It is wild when they do that, man.
I know I've. Do they still have that invisible fire?
Yes. Yeah.
I mean, I can't, every time I think about it, I always think about Will Ferrell, Ricky Bobby.
The back the Daytona is if you've never been to one of these super speedways, what I always tell people when they go to like Daytona or Talladega for the first time is I don't like people say about Augusta National. They're like, until you go to Augusta National, you don't realize how hilly the golf course is. It's just television just can't quite do it justice until you get there. And you're like, oh, my God, this thing is really hilly. There's an uneven lie every time they go at the ball. It's the same thing at these super speedways. They can show you the banking as the cars are going around it.
Yeah.
But unless you are there or unless they do one of those shots where they show you a guy walking from the top of the fence down to the bottom of the banking to get a real understanding of how steep that is. It is steep.
I always like when they go from the bottom to the top and you see them getting up towards the wall and it's like there's a little bit of a struggle.
Yeah, exactly. it's absolutely nuts. And the speed is just incredible. It's just incredible. And they're doing it right next to each other, like within inches of each other. And we talked about this with Jeff Hammond about when on the 20th anniversary of Dale Earnhardt being killed. And we said, look, if you have that tragedy and you can say, but a lot of good came from that tragedy, Dale Earnhardt is an example of that.
Yeah.
His death led to so many safety innovations of the sport saying, we are not losing drivers. We are not going to be losing drivers. And a lot of motorsports have had that, have had long periods of time where they have not lost a driver within their competition. Now, smaller competitions, yeah, but I think Dale Earnhardt has been the last cup driver on that level, not the bottom levels, but that level, to have died in a accident on track. Yeah. And that's a legacy. That's an important legacy to leave. It's sad that it took a death like that to build better safety barriers and better cars with stronger roll cages and things like that. But a lot of what happened with Ryan Preece was the fact that they were hell-bent on making sure drivers would be able to walk away from almost anything. And I know when they built these tracks, and I if you go to the history of the sport, there's a great book called American Zoom, read by Peter Golenbach, really talks about the history of NASCAR and how it came from the Moonshine Hills into the stock car sport. It's written about early 90s. And they talked about drivers racing at Talladega for the first time, and they did not want to do it. Those things are airplane wings back in the day.
Yeah.
Those cars were airplane wings. They were coming off the banking down to the straightaway. If they got squirrely, that car and the aerodynamics, and we're talking older cars, we're talking like 1960s. Those cars flew into the cornfield back behind the track. They got way up in the air. Those drivers came off that thing, nuh-uh, I ain't doing this. I mean, when they were talking racing, it was like half-mile oval, short tracking, dirt. Like, that's what they meant by racing your cars, not flying off a corner at 250 miles an hour and then catching wind as you moved around and flying up in the air and ending up crashed in a field. And so they wanted to keep that, but they needed to fix all this stuff. So it was you're right, man. 10 times that guy flipped.
I mean,
that's,
it was
crazy,
just
nuts.
It was just amazing. I mean, you know, pieces of the car obviously falling off because, like you said, I mean that's what that car is designed to do. My sons were like, "Whoa!" And I'm like, "Oh, it's all right. He's in a roll cage."
Yep.
But then, you know, it takes forever for him to get out, and you start to think like, okay, you know, it's a little bit longer than normal. But yeah, That was amazing to see. And yeah, I'm like I said, we just had gotten home, walked inside, the TV was still on, and it was like, oh my God, there it is. Watched it live.
Unbelievable. Number 41. And then just when you see that car like catching air and you can see the air pushing the car up.
That slow motion replay is like right when it hit the grass and it just kind of floated.
Floats up in the air. It's like that's
I can't remember who the announcers were, but they were absolutely right. It's like, yeah, this thing is like a toy car right now. It's like, you're absolutely right. That thing is flipping like it's not 3,000 or whatever, how many pounds it is.
Crazy. Dave Preston joins us next talking Washington Commanders as we continue.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sportsnap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Well, I changed the words to this song, but nevertheless, Come-a-come-a-come-a Commanders is going to be a hit. I know it is. Let's go to the Progressive guest line. Progressive Insurance, or a quote on auto, home, and life. Visit Progressive.com today. Dave Preston, WTOP. You run and throw, you run and throw. That's not a bad line, man. Good job.
Flame would be easy if you stopped at 3rd and 9.
That's
defense
right.
Defense is fine, man.
Defense is fine. Yeah. Thank you for coming on.
We're going to make this happen.
You are. You got to get on the T-shirt train as quickly as possible with this. That's awesome. By the way, I can't hear this song without thinking of your comic command. I can't. Every time I hear it,
it's
catchy. You did a good job.
It's the gift that keeps on taking.
It sure does. How much of this season, Dave, is going to be about the play on the field, but how much of it for fans is just going to be, we have a new owner, let's just look ahead to the future?
I think it's a little bit of both. I think first and foremost, there's the king is gone. Yeah, Dan Snyder is no longer in charge. And we can feel good about buying T-shirts. We can feel good about not hating the team name because it was his idea. We can feel good about going to the stadium and buying concessions and being a part of this fan base that really has suffered for the last 20 years or so. You write off the first couple of years because anytime there's a new owner, there's always a little bit of a learning curve. It happens everywhere. But I think after maybe after the Gibbs regime and people realized, wow, this is kind of where this world is. And the fact that FedEx Field under Dan Snyder's ownership was not the best as far as customer service, I think people are excited to have something they can get behind again. But there are expectations, and there is curiosity to see if Sam Howell is going to be the first long-term quarterback for this team since, well, Kirk Cousins a few years ago.
All right, what do they like about Sam Howell? He had one start last year, but obviously they know him better than that one start. What do they like about him?
He beat the Cowboys,
Nice.
He also has a stronger arm than Taylor Heinicke. Heinicke made a lot of plays happen despite his abilities, and while that's good to have for a backup, someone who might start 2, 3, 4 games tops during the regular season, he's not a guy that you want to trot up there for 17 games where after week 5, week 6, every defensive coordinator has enough tape on him to hang him. So I think the ceiling for Sam Howell is a lot higher. I actually saw him play a few years ago at the Military Bowl in Annapolis, and he tore apart Temple. Granted, it was Temple, and granted, he had weapons at UNC that season. But you know, this is a kid who has the legs, he has the arm, he has the abilities to be a very good NFL quarterback. It's just a matter of, can he be able to throw upright this year? Will his offensive line let him down? And will his weapons be able to respond this season?
I always believe in the Parcells line, you are what your record is. I never take that away. However, I always like to look at the devil in the details. 8-8-1, I've always liked these records because I always go, are you closer to the playoffs or did you overachieve? How did you evaluate last season's 8-8-1 mark?
Well, for the record, I had them going 6-8-3. So
okay.
I was a little bit off the mark. Yeah, let's be honest. I think that they were the classic team that we've seen the last few years. Every Ron Rivera team, even the team that made the playoffs, they were sub 500, 7-9. They start slow, they have a surge mid-season, and then for some reason they peter off at the end. It happened even during the playoff season. It happened this past season where all they had to do was beat the Giants, and they wound up losing and tying a Giants team that really wasn't that good, and they faltered down the stretch. So you are spot on with Bill Parcells saying that you are what your record is. I think with football, there's a little bit more leeway because unlike baseball where you have 162 exposures or basketball and hockey where you've got 82 exposures, there's more definition. I think there's more of a chance for variation in football where because it's a snapshot league, it's 17 snapshots now, you can be markedly better or markedly worse than your actual record just because of a play here or a play there. So I'm not saying that a 2-15 team can make the playoffs, but for instance, the last year's Commanders team could easily have been 5-12. They could easily have been 11-6.
Is Ron Rivera coaching for his job with a new ownership? Could we at least see new owners come in and they like their own people? They like to make that higher. Is there a feeling like Ron Rivera has got a coach for his job just because of that?
I think there's got to be. I think there's that. There's the fact that this is year four of the Rivera regime. And usually by year three, teams, you find out if, okay, is this the right coach? Is this the right quarterback? You know, sometimes even year two, you know. I mean, even, you know, you look at Denver last year, 7-8 games into it, you knew that it was a bad idea. So I think year four, they've yet to post a winning record. They need to show some progress there. And even if there wasn't a new owner, I think he'd be coaching for his job this season. With a new owner, that multiplies because, as you mentioned, yes, you want your own people. You kind of want to flush everything that was here before. And I think that if they don't make the playoffs this year, I don't think Ron Rivera is coming back for a year five.
All right, so let's talk about the offense. Eric Bieniemy, what is he inheriting in terms of talent around Sam Howell?
He's got a great receiving core. Terry McLaurin's a fantastic player. Talk about a complete gift, dumb luck. He probably wasn't going to be drafted by Washington a few years ago, but they picked him because the late Dwayne Haskins had played with him at Ohio State, and Dan Snyder wanted to placate his first-round draft pick by bringing a buddy along. And what a great selection that wound up being. He wound up being, you know, the best player in that draft for the Burgundy and Gold. He's a fantastic player on and off the field. Great guy. Jahan Dotson, rookie from Penn State last year, shined, had some injury issues. He should be on track this year. He's looked good in the preseason. Yes, it's preseason, but he looks sharp. I think the question is, do they have a tight end? They've put a bunch of different guys in there who have just been average the last few seasons. Brian Robinson should be healthy this year, the running back who got shot last August but still came back to contribute to the team. So there should be weapons. I think the skill position players are good, and that's been kind of the case the last 20 years with this team when you look at whether it's been a Clinton Portis, whether it's been an Alfred Morris, whether it's been a Santana Moss or Deshaun Jackson. There have been skilled players on this team consistently. The question is, can they put together a good offensive line? Because last year it was a mess, and that ruined Carson Wentz before he even got started. And a young quarterback like Sam Howell, like quarterbacks in the past for the Burgundy and Gold, it's tough to learn your craft when you're lying on your back five, six, seven times a game.
You know, that's the one thing we were talking about this morning. You know, that old saying, if you got two quarterbacks, you have none. But this is like 7 years or 6 years of starting a different quarterback going into week one. Like, how long can you do this before you finally have to get a guy?
Well, and they've lacked consistency at that position. Kirk Cousins was their guy. Yeah. They had him. All they had to do was show him love. All Bruce Allen had to do was not call him Kurt by mistake.
That's right.
Repeatedly. It's like, no, Kirk, the captain from Starfleet, not Kurt, the kid from The Sound of Music. They're two different people. And that was completely mishandled by the team. That's a previous regime. I think you have to give the current brain trust faith moving forward that they identified a quarterback last year. They were able to get a guy in the fifth round that I think a year before a lot of people thought would be a first or second rounder. So I think you have to trust these guys that, all right, this is the guy, and he's going to have a one-year audition. If he doesn't work out this year, he's not getting a second chance, because you figure that if Sam Howell doesn't work out this year, if things go awry offensively, odds are they don't make the playoffs. Odds are there's a new coaching staff in place next year, and odds are they're looking for a new quarterback.
All right, I do want a T-shirt when Common Commanders becomes a thing. By the way, they're going to stick with that name. I got 60 seconds. Are they going? Does he like that name, Josh Harris?
For your sake,
I hope so. So your song becomes a hit.
I know. I think it's, so. The pressure's on me. I got to make it happen. I think they're going to look into it, but I don't think it's on the front burner. I think it's something they look in maybe 2, 3, 4 years.
Awesome, Dave. Always good talking to you, my friend. Thank you so much for our preview help, and we'll catch up with you during the season, my man.
T-shirts on the horizon.
Please send me one. I want one. All right, Dave Preston, WTOP on Washington. Again, 8-8-1 last year. I think that's a quiet 8-8-1. I mean, when everybody was, I think a lot of it had to do with everyone buzzing in that division about the Giants. Like, the Eagles were doing their thing, and the Eagles were rolling. The one, remember, they were undefeated. They did lose to Washington. But I think there was so much like, what's Brian Daboll doing? Wow, the Giants, look at this. You kind of expected the Eagles to do well. You kind of expected Dallas to do well. You looked around the league. You saw, you know, maybe the NFC South was kind of falling apart a little bit. And the Packers were struggling. But I think that was overlooked was, here was an 8-8-1 football team that wasn't that far out of the playoff picture. But now they got a new ownership. Now they got a new owner, and looking forward to that is the fan base. But they still have a team that could squeeze out one or two more wins and actually might make a showing. But the rest of the division did make the playoffs, and we've got them for you the rest of the week. All right, it's Sports Map Radio. It's Wake Up Call.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, thanks to Dave Preston working on the Washington Commanders this week. And then we got the Giants, the Cowboys, and the Eagles later this week.
Yep.
Maybe Bobby Belt will join us, a good friend of the show. Always like Bobby Belt. I've always said about Bobby, he's one of the best. He knows his team as good or better than people know their teams. I mean, he really, really knows the Cowboys.
Yeah.
Eton Shander might join us this week.
That one I can almost guarantee. I'm trying to push that off towards the end of the week. We'll see when he has availability.
I said this many times. I get nervous when he hosts for me when I'm out because he's so good. He's so talented. And I'm always like, hey, no. Get somebody who can't talk. That would be my ideal replacement. Don't get Eton. Eton not only can talk, he actually makes sense.
Sometimes. Like I said, I think we might have to have him on for two segments because, you know, when he did fill in for you last week, he promised to bring in a toy that sounded like me, and he did not.
Oh, okay. So are you going to tell him to do that? To bring the toy on the
yes.
air? When you do, we say, come on, hey. We'll talk Eagles, and then.
Or we're going to talk toy and then Eagles. I don't know. I've been watching a lot of Johnny Carson clips lately. It's kind of been feeding
down a rabbit hole?
Well, you know, it's on my TikTok. My algorithm is pulling up. What it's pulling up is Don Rickles. I can't get enough of Don Rickles.
Don Rickles is great.
I loved him when I was younger. I love him still today. I mean, there was no better mean comedian than him.
That's right.
I mean, just the way he delivered. And he got away with everything.
He did.
It's amazing. When you watch him with those roasts, I was watching him. Who was he? He was roasting Hank Aaron.
He roasted Hank Aaron? What is there to roast about Hank Aaron?
Yeah, he found things.
He found the thing? Yeah.
Found things. I mean, you know, his roast of Sammy Davis Jr. is probably one of the best, though.
They're great.
But anyways, so that led me down a rabbit hole. Nice, you know. So the reason why I brought this up was because if we have him on for two segments, talk show wise, when a talk show host, a late night talk show host, would have a guest on for two segments, do they do the fun fluff first and then go into the meat?
Oh, that's a good question.
Or do they go meat and then fun fluff?
I think we'll have to research that.
I think they go fun fluff first.
Yeah, then get to the why you're here.
And then say, hey, you know, coming up on the other side, we're going to talk Eagles now.
Hey, so you're promoting a film that's coming out on Thursday. Yeah, exactly.
Which, by the way, I've always heard that was one of the harder voices to imitate.
What, Johnny Carson?
Johnny Carson. Yeah.
Rich Little did not a bad one, but it was always hard.
You said that was the toughest one for him.
I have a theory about those roasts, because I remember as a kid seeing some of those Dean Martin roasts, and I didn't quite understand them. I was a little, obviously very young, but I would see them.
Right.
And then there would be the late night, you could buy the roasts, like you could buy the Dean Martin celebrity roast.
Yeah, they show the infomercial that was like an hour long, and you're like, I can't get enough of this.
Exactly. And so you could order the tapes, you know, of the old days. So I have this theory behind it, because I've seen a few, but not all, of the Comedy Central roasts that they've done now, like Justin Bieber and whatnot. And don't get me wrong, a good roast is when you are laughing with the people making fun of you.
Yeah.
Right? Like, that makes it all really, really fun. But you are talking about an era in those Dean Martin celebrity roasts. Who was in, like, that group, right? You had Sammy, Frank, mm-hmm. Dean, obviously. There was Don Rickles. There was Lucille Ball. There was Foster Brooks. Like, it was all of these people. And they were, like, they were the people that would walk around in a Vegas hotel and everyone would go crazy, right? They would go nuts. They were a club. They were a group. But whenever they would do these roasts, you got the feeling they really loved each other. Like, they really, really loved each other.
They were friends.
They were friends and really deep friends, right? They were all in these movies together. They were all part of these projects together.
Yep.
It was not uncommon for Frank to do a show and Don Rickles just appear out of nowhere just because he was there. Why not come on stage and let's goof around? Lucille Ball, all those people. And even though I can watch a Comedy Central roast, I don't get that feeling that they're all in the same club.
Right.
Like, they may laugh at each other's jokes, but I feel like they don't hang with each other.
Like, you sit there and you try to figure it out. Like, you know, the one guy, Jeff Ross. Okay, he's just a mainstay for every celebrity roast there is.
Right.
And I get that. You know, you always have those type of guys. And I know he tries to be kind of like the Don Rickles, but it's, you know, you missed the mark. Because Don Rickles actually had a funny way of doing it without using a whole lot of words. He just, you know, facial expressions were one. But yeah, I get the same thing. Like, I, you know, you watch, like you said, you know, there's the Justin Bieber roast or Alec Baldwin. And I sit there and I'm trying to think, all right, what's the connection?
Yeah.
A few of them I figure out. A few of them I understand, like, okay, there's the connection here. But, like, Bob Saget had a roast. The only one that really made sense to me that was there was John Stamos. And I get that he's performed with a lot of different comedians, because he being a comic himself, but there were some people up there was like, okay, I'm missing the connection somewhere.
Right, exactly. So that's just, but yeah, no, we will have Eton on, and then we'll do the fluff stuff first, and then maybe the Eagles have some good times with Eton when he comes on the show. So I can't stress out enough. Oh, by the way, Philip on Twitter, Comedy Central roast can't hold a candle to Don Rickles, legend.
Right.
Don Rickles is a legend.
Just, oh, my God. I mean,
just Google that time he was telling the Frank Sinatra story on Johnny Carson.
Oh, God. That is one of the best.
Oh, hilarious. Can't you see I'm best. Eating, Frank?
But or if That's you want, great. You know, listen to him, watch him put down Governor Reagan
at the
Celebrity Roast. And then being the guy the opening act for Presidential Reagan's inaugural address.
Yeah.
Or President Reagan's inaugural. I mean, he opened up with the funniest joke. Webster introduced him, and he first thing out of his mouth was like, the kid's never going to make it in basketball. You know, and he's the only one that can get away with that.
He, a few years ago, not that long ago, within a good handful, he was roasting Shirley MacLaine at an award show.
Yes.
It was great. It was funny. Still very funny.
Yeah, Clint Eastwood.
But he's known Shirley MacLaine for 50 years.
Yeah, same with...
You know what I mean?
You know, same with Clinton.
Same
like he
with
was
Clinton.
Putting
I mean,
Clinton
they've known
down.
Him forever. I mean, forever.
And his jokes with Clint are the exact same, but it's just the way he delivers it every single time, just calling Clint overrated.
Don't forget, because we mentioned... Yeah, because we mentioned Clint Eastwood and Shirley MacLaine, Two Mules for Sister Sarah is a fantastic movie. People should watch it.
Are they in that movie together?
They're both in together. Yeah, it's good. Really, really good movie.
I still have a hard time believing that Shirley MacLaine and Warren Beatty were brother and sister.
Shirley MacLaine, yeah, that's really wild. That's really wild. Shirley MacLaine was a big deal. Like, I only knew her as a crazy, weird, mystical lady until I got into her career before I was really old enough to know.
Right, she was always like the...
Yeah.
Pitching Cleo or psychics or stuff like that. Like, God, what is it?
If one thing you get from the show today, try to watch BS High, the documentary.
Yes.
I've been really like obsessed with how people are viewing this documentary since I watched it. Like literally, I've been Googling every article of anybody reviewing this to make sure this guy doesn't win. That this guy doesn't win. I told you this earlier. Billy McFarlane wants to have 10 fire festivals. I couldn't care less. Scam more rich kids. I don't care. This guy is dangerous. This guy is very, very dangerous. And I hope he gets more and more exposed so that every single mom that's not paying attention to what, she's trying to raise her kid, but she doesn't know who's who and who's out to want her son to play, that she does at some point come across this guy's name, Roy Johnson, and realize, my that's bad news. He's going to try this again because he knows that as much as the Rolling Stone may write about it, the much as sports talk radio may talk about it, there's going to be a lot of moms out there, single parent homes with good athlete kids that he can expose and say, oh, I'm good. I'm legit. And continue this con again. He's a bad, bad man.
Well, he can't possibly do it again, right?
You can't. There's too much exposure. Yeah. I can't imagine. If he tries it again, I hope ESPN jumps all over it. I hope the major networks jump all over it. I mean, they were the ones that initially exposed all this in the first place, but I hope he doesn't, because what he's done to this group of kids, and I hope somebody comes along and is able to help in whatever way they can repair some of the damage to the credit reports, the bills that he owes that are on these kids' records because he snaked his way into putting the charges in their names and not his. I hope to God somebody is able to rectify this so the kids don't suffer for it. Cause it's a documentary, and I usually watch these things and I go, whatever, but I watched this and I was obsessed with how people felt about this individual. Bishop Sycamore was a joke. I think you and I were laughing about it last year.
Yeah.
Like, how did this team even come together? And then when you really know the story, it's like, this is sad. This is
sad. I mean, yeah, we made fun of it because it's like this fake high school, how did they end up playing against IMG Academy? And they got shellacked. I mean,
59 to nothing.
Yeah. And it wasn't even that. It wasn't. I mean, you say 59-0 was the final score, and I think it's because IMG took their foot off the gas and only scored like 9 points.
Well, they had a running clock in the second half.
Right.
Clock continued. But you know what? What he didn't understand, this is how this guy talks about being smart and conning and all that stuff. What this guy didn't understand was if you play IMG Academy and ESPN's going to broadcast it, if you don't show up, there are going to be ESPN producers going, why did we put this on the air?
Yeah.
And then they're going to dig as to why you lost 59-0 when they agreed to broadcast this game.
Well, not only that.
And that's when it
was, and then all the talking points going on too.
Then everything started to fall apart. So watch BS High if you can. All right, we'll see you tomorrow.